The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
He's a good friend. He joins us every single week here. He is the athletic director for the UAB Blazers. Mark Ingram joins us on the left side of the screen here as we do our, of course, our YouTube channel here on Tony Curry Radio. You can hear this show at least five times a week on the TKR app and wherever you get your favorite podcast. He is Mark Ingram, UABSports.com for everything that is UAB. Mark, how you doing, brother? What's going on?
I'm great. Happy New Year to you.
And Happy New Year to you, too. This is the first show of 2024. We'll talk about some hoops, some other sports things. But, wow, what an incredible semifinal we had there between our Final Four. Probably the best two games we've had in history. You'd have to make that argument, certainly going down to a game in overtime. Of course, Alabama comes up with the short end. And then that nail-biter against Texas and Washington. But your thoughts on those two ball games?
Well, they were great. I totally agree with you. I can't recall a year where both games were that close and that competitive. I think, you know, what we want is to have a more competitive environment nationally. And that's what we've been looking at. And, you know, Washington and Oregon have been in the playoff, but I think they're the only two teams. I'm saying, oh, Southern Cal, they've been in it. But, you know, the if you look year by year, most of the teams are from the Southeastern Conference, Oklahoma and Ohio State. And so it's really good. It's healthy for the sport to have teams from other conferences participate. And you had Clemson in it. And but Southeastern schools primarily, which, of course, we all being where we're from, we're not surprised. We think the best football is played in the Southeast. And I think predominantly it clearly is. But I think it's healthy for football to have other teams in it. Now, if you're a Bama fan or you know, you don't like to hear that and you know, you want, you know, Alabama, Georgia, you know, LSU in it every year. But it's good for the sport to have other teams in it and from around the country. And it's better for the total viewing audience.
What does it say to you as an athletic director? And obviously the SEC has been super strong for a long period of time, but I believe since what, 98, when the BCS era started, Ohio State's the only Big Ten school to actually win a national title. You mentioned the USC and the Pac-12 and how apropos that whole conference is falling apart and they could actually walk away from not having a Pac-12 conference with a national title, which is just kind of blows your mind because the Pac-12 really hasn't been part of this thing over the last 8 to 10 years. But what does it say about the parity, if you will, and trying to even things out? Is it important for each and every conference to get their share? Is it based off geographical beings? Will the South always be strong because of the climate we have here? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, the details of how the money is shared, I don't know off the top of my head how it is, but every conference is participating in the revenue from the college football playoff. So, you know, it's on a different topic where people are like, well, that the players don't get that money. Yeah, they do. Mm-hmm. They get it because that fancy weight room that you're in got paid for through the money that the school received, you know, the nice hotel you stay in when you travel on the road, the food that you ate, that's all paid for through the revenue that we cobble together from ticket sales and jersey sales and, you know, bowl revenue, playoff revenue, all that stuff comes together. NCAA basketball tournament revenue, we get all that stuff. We all participate and receive that, which is how we run the program. So the kids are not getting it as cash in their hand, but they're getting it in other indirect ways. And so every conference is getting money. Every school is getting money. But do they get more for being in it? I'm not sure how that works. And what I think it is that is determined conference by conference. So like in the SEC, for example, they may say, like, if you are a participant, you get a higher share than the other members of the league. But if there's nobody, let's say, the ACC wasn't represented. So the ACC probably get a number and then from the playoff, and then everybody in the ACC gets the same amount of money.
Yeah. Is it strange to you that it seems like, and maybe this is just because it's such in our face, but like the FAU's the world going to a Final Four and then, of course, leaving their conference. You got the Pac-12 with Washington, of course, doesn't even have a conference. They're going to be playing for a national title. Maybe it's just me, but it seems like there have been, just over the last few years, a lot of teams that have either left their conferences and then end up being a national title winner, or I don't know. Maybe it just seems like it's been like that. But am I missing something here?
Man, I mean, look, conference realignment has always existed. If you look back, you know, Tulane used to be in the SEC, Georgia Tech used to be in the SEC, South Carolina and Arkansas now have been in the SEC for 30 years, but they entered that league in either 91 or 92. So, the old Big Eight became the Big 12, and that has changed. Colorado left it. Now they're back. You know, that's always existed. I really am not a huge fan of this really super large geographic thing. It's bad for the fans. I think maybe it is good for television, and which produces conference revenue because you've got multiple time zones now, right? The ACC is going to have the West Coast Pacific time zone, which they never used to have.
Yeah.
But that's not good for any of the fans. It's not good for the parent or the players. When we considered the American Athletic Conference compared to Conference USA, we saw those footprints as almost identical. So we jumped. We moved. We made a move, but we didn't feel like our geographic change was very different. We were already going to Boca Raton, so to go to Tampa is not farther. Yeah. We were already going to Old Dominion, which is Northern Virginia, so to go just in football to Navy or other sports to go to Temple is not that different. We dropped El Paso, Texas. So we picked up that distance, but we dropped El Paso. So we were already going to Dallas to play Denton, to play North Texas in Denton, Texas. So picking up SMU is no big deal. Now, of course, they're leaving, but we already had San Antonio. We already had Rice. So it wasn't a huge geographic change. Some of the things we lost was the drive to Middle Tennessee and Southern Miss and Western, but we picked up a drive to Memphis.
Yeah.
So it's not perfect.
Yeah.
And it is different. But we did not go from this to like this, you know, in terms of our footprint. It didn't expand like that the way the Big Ten and the ACC now are. And so anyway, I wish that we could figure out some way. I get playing national games, which is why I would rather, if I was those schools, to do it. If I had the money to easily move around, I would rather do that in the non-conference scheduling. Mm-hmm. You know, if I was Georgia, let's play Oregon. Let's go home and home with Oregon, you know, in a non-conference matchup. And some schools do that. But I wish we could figure out a way, in particularly every other sport, to find a way to make it geographic. If we could figure out a geographic rivalry that everybody would get comfortable with, well, then that's what makes fans travel. Yeah. That's really what made this. When people go, why is the SEC so good? It's because, man, like from Birmingham, Alabama, you can get in your car and in about 5 hours be to almost every single SEC school.
Yep.
You know, and if you drew a triangle from like Birmingham to Chattanooga to Nashville, kind of, if you live in that little triangle, you can kind of get everywhere within a reasonable drive.
Sure.
That's why it was so good, because games didn't used to be on television and you could drive to all these places. Like, really think of how close you are to, from here, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, LSU's 5 hours. Vanderbilt's 3 hours, Tennessee's 3.5, Georgia's 3.5. Obviously, Alabama and Auburn are close. I mean, like, it's really compact.
Yeah.
Lexington, Kentucky is probably, I just basically did it, it's probably 5 to 6 hours. And then now when you layer in South Carolina's 5 hours, when you add in Arkansas is a little bit farther now, as I said, it's, you know, Missouri's farther now that they're in, A&M's farther now that they're in, and of course, Oklahoma and Texas are farther now that they're in. But what it was awesome. And that's why the strength of the fandom was so good and those rivalries became so good because they were able to travel to the games so easily.
This is the UAB director's chair. He is the UAB athletic director, Mark Ingram. He joined us every single week right here on the TKR app, over 100,000 people strong. We can, of course, listen to the show 5 days a week, and you can also hear it wherever you get your favorite podcast, and right here on our Tony Curry YouTube channel. We do have an interesting email here from info@TonyCurryRadio.net, info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Scott in Tupelo said, if we're going to hammer on the committee for picking the Final Four the way they did, that seems like they nailed it. We had two fantastic games, and we saw the Georgia FSU game. It was an absolute blowout. Now I realize that FSU, don't know how they showed up for that game, didn't know if they cared about that football game, but it certainly looked like they did the right thing by not putting them in the Final Four. If we're going to hammer them for picking these ball games, should we give them accolades for doing a good job? As an athletic director, do you kind of look at that and go, eh, they did a pretty good job? Because we do it with March Madness every year. There's always a 16, a 15, a 14, a 13 seed that ends up getting to an Elite Eight. We're like, wow, they missed that one. Or is it just, you know, the way the ball bounces? But what's your thoughts on that as an athletic director?
Well, you're spot on there, Tony, is even with the 68 teams that get into the NCAA basketball tournament, we still, I mean, we even show who are the last four to get in and who are the first four to be left out. And so it doesn't matter whether we have a 14 playoff or a 12 or a 36. We're always going to talk about that team that did not get in. In this case, we are talking about Florida State and Georgia. We're talking less about Georgia because they weren't undefeated and they lost that last game. But to me, it clearly Georgia is the team that if you were going to say should have gotten in. And hats off to Florida State for being undefeated in the regular season. And I hate that they couldn't get in too. Auburn fans will say, well, we were 13-0 and didn't get into the championship. I think that was back in the BCS days, pre-playoff. But nonetheless, I think in that year there were three undefeateds and they could only take two.
Yeah.
And so I want to say that year, boy, I'm guessing here, that was, I think, Texas Southern Cal maybe. But if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Yeah. But the point is, they got left out in a year that they easily could have gone. I don't get the opt-outs in the bowl games. I think it's a terrible mistake. I think the players make a mistake. I think they don't realize. Some former players will say, man, he's got nothing to prove. He should have played. Or he's got nothing to play. He didn't have to play in that bowl game. He could have gotten injured. Yeah, but he also had an opportunity to play with his teammates for the last time ever. He also had an opportunity to play against another tough opponent who's an evenly matched opponent to show the NFL, yes, hey, we went against that team, and I did well against them too.
Yeah.
And I don't think it looks good to NFL teams when you opt out.
I can't remember the last time a player ended up opting in and then got injured and it hurt him in his NFL draft. I don't remember someone saying, well, you know, if he just sat out, we wouldn't have taken him number three overall. He's going to get number three anyway.
Yeah, like if that's almost like saying, look, I'm a preseason All-American. I'm going to opt out the whole season.
Yeah.
I'm preseason All-American. I have nothing to prove.
Yeah.
I'm going to opt out my entire next season. I mean, at what point are we doing that? Like, you got to play the game, dude. Yeah. You got to go play and prove yourself. That's the whole point. They don't have to choose you. You know, we've had players opt out and never play another football game before again.
Yeah.
You know, so that I'm talking about UAB. Mm-hmm. We had players opt out thinking they were going to get drafted or something. Then they didn't get drafted. They got drafted in the very last round and get a couple of preseason snaps, a cup of coffee with the league and go to practice squad. Yeah. You know, is that what you wanted?
Well, and so far we have not had a player. I mean, we're looking at the quarterback at Washington. The guy's pretty good. He's going to be playing. Yeah. Now, if he decided, hey, listen, tonight I don't want to sit and I don't want to play in this national championship game, we've never had that happen either. So, I mean, maybe it's a point that, you know, if they feel like.
And credit to Bo Nix.
Yeah.
No. Bo Nix for playing with Oregon.
The dude's played more college football games than anybody. If there's anybody I wanted to say, he set a record this year. If you said, listen, I've had enough. I've played over 60 games. I want to sit this one out. But he even said, listen, it was another opportunity to be with my boys, to get on that football field with those guys. I wouldn't have given it up for anything. And he's got a lot riding too. So good for him. Yeah.
Yeah. Look, man, my old teammate, Peyton Manning, was projected to be the number one overall draft pick in the NFL draft and came back for a senior season. And he did it because he loved playing football and he loved going to school where he went to school and he loved his teammates. And he wasn't ready to go to the NFL. He wasn't emotionally ready. He was plenty mature. He was physically ready. You want to play another season of college football?
Yeah.
Because he knew he'd never get it back. A full season now, not a game.
Yeah.
I just don't get it. I think the mentality, I don't understand the talking heads out there that are, he has nothing to prove. I think they're doing a disservice to these kids. I think former players that are vocal about it, I think they are misguided. Trent Dilfer talks all the time about during when he was doing draft analytics for ESPN for 6 years or however long it was. He said what he realized that these scouts are looking at is snaps played.
Mm-hmm.
These guys that have never played football or haven't played a lot of football are less attractive than those who have and have played a lot and have shown durability, shown toughness, shown their ability to play well week in and week out against a bad opponent and a good opponent. He's like, that's what they look at.
Does that play the same way with you in combines? When players decide they don't want to show up their pro days, their combines, or they'll only show up for their pro days because they don't want to be put in a situation where they have different wide receivers and stuff. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, it calls a lot of things into question. I mean, what it says to me is like, okay, I don't know that you want to compete. Yeah. Or maybe you're not as fast as we all thought you were, and so you don't want to be measured against that guy. Now, if a person's like, look, man, I hurt my hamstring last week, and I don't want to show up and run slow. I agree with that now.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Don't go run slow. We had a player here, not to name names, who's a really good player, and he may still be on somebody's practice squad. But he ran with a hamstring. He got talked into it by somebody, and he shouldn't have done it. He got talked into it by a scout or somebody, I think. I don't remember the exact story. And he didn't run as fast, and he's fast.
Yeah.
And he didn't run as fast. So the thing that his speed was a great asset of his, and he wasn't able to show it off. So it, even though they go, no, it's cool. We know you have the injury. Yeah, but you clocked him with that watch, and you recorded it and shared it with your ownership and your management and whatever. That you can't tell me that didn't hurt the guy. I mean, maybe he didn't. But, I mean, so I think you do have to be careful with that. But, look, man, they want competitors. It's a competitive environment. It is professional sports where if you are not better tomorrow than you were today, you might be going home.
Yeah.
So it's not like you're not just gifted this opportunity. You're not entitled to be in the NFL, just like you're not entitled, frankly, to play college sports. You got to be treating it, in an executive approach.
Absolutely. Our most listened to show here on Tony Curry Radio. Of course, we do classic rock around the clock. We've got all kinds of Lynyrd Skynyrd shows, ZZ Top shows, but this is one of our favorites here. We do every single week with Mark Ingram, the UAB athletic director, UABsports.com. Before we get into some classic rock news, I wanted to ask you, this will be the last show we're doing. It's the first show of 2024, but the last show we'll be doing as the Pac-12 remains. You can sit there and say it's already fallen apart. And I just think it's incredibly weird that, of all the years, the Pac-12 has been held out for whatever reason, because they seem like they always beat each other up towards the end of the year. We thought that may happen again. We saw with Utah and USC last year, they always end up tripping each other up and never got to the big dance. Here you have Washington, who's played lights out, undefeated. They're going to play for a national title. I just think it would just be wonderful for them to win a national championship, despite the fact that we don't have a Pac-12. And you go back, and I mean, you look at the Big 12. It's been around since what, the 80s or 90s. The Pac-12, the PCC, I guess you go back, is like 1915 or something. I mean, it's got a lot of history to it. I mean, it's incredible. Now it was the Pac-8 and the Pac-10, the Pac-12, and I realize it's kind of changed some transformation, but it's been around a hell of a long time. From a melancholy standpoint, a sentimental standpoint, it's for me as a college football fan, this is really sad. And I don't know if I should feel sad for the Pac-12. I don't have a dog in that hunt, but for the fact that I'm just wondering, why did this happen? Is it possible it'll happen again? It just seems like, it just seems like we've just lost this thing. I don't know anything about the Pac-12. I don't. I don't live there. I don't know. I don't follow the teams. I used to when Mike Leach was out to Washington State, and I followed him quite a bit, but I couldn't really tell you. But something just doesn't feel right. It's just really, really sad. Your thoughts?
Yeah, and I agree with you. I like you. I don't have any stake in that situation. What they do is their business. I know every school has to do what they think is best for them. That's the same conversation that Dr. Watts and I had, and our other leaders around the table had when leaving Conference USA to go to the American. Is we have to do what we think is right for our institution and the best thing we can to advance and move forward for our institution and the association with the other schools in the American Conference. We thought the American Conference schools were more alike us in terms of an academic strength and academic medical center and those things. And that those associations are valuable from an academic institution standpoint, which fans don't realize really does play a lot into the fact, into the decision. It's not the only thing, but it's a factor in that decision. And that might resonate more, let's say, at UAB than it did at Florida Atlantic. I can't speak for them, but it was a big part of it. And it is a part of it. Like when you see conversations about the Big Ten, every school in the Big Ten is what's called an AAU certified institution, which is an academic distinction that that universities pride themselves in having. And everybody, I think everybody in the Big Ten is an AAU institution. So when that expansion was happening, it was, well, you know, is UCLA an AAU? Yeah, UCLA is like a top five academic in the country. So like the other presidents who may value that in the Big Ten, you know, out of the 12 or however many schools are in the Big Ten, 14 schools, however many that they had, maybe only 10 of them cared about that, but those 10 care about it, right? Or maybe only four of them care about it. Those four care about that. So those are also part of the conversation. But I agree with you, Tony. I come back to what we were talking about a minute ago, the geographic nature of what the Pac-12 was and that West Coast competition from Arizona up to Oregon and Washington. I think it's going to be really, I don't know. I think it's sad too. Again, I think it's bad for their fans. It's bad for the players' parents. The idea of traveling across country to see your kids play or whatever is hard. Their answer is, well, you can catch every game on television. Yeah, I can. That ain't the same as watching my kid play live in person, who, again, most likely will never play again once that is done.
Do you think
I've invested a lot of time and energy in my kids time, right? They've been playing T-ball or whatever since they were five. I've taken them to hitting lessons and fielding lessons and private this and club ball and travel ball in the summers and all that. I've skipped vacations for the last 15, 18 years of my life to take them to all this stuff, to give them this opportunity, which they got. And now I can't watch them because they're traveling from New Jersey to Los Angeles.
Do you think it plays into the Pac-12 at all? And we've been talking about this for years. A lot of people on the East Coast obviously don't see Pac-12 games because of the 3-hour time change. And obviously everything's Eastern Standard Time. We're central here in Birmingham. And a lot of people talk about, well, I can't stay up till 1 o'clock in the morning to watch a Washington State game. And I certainly get that. And so a lot of where a lot of the voting happens and a lot of the big writing happens in Chicago and Cincinnati and in New York, not so much in LA, obviously, because they're out there. But a lot of people say that it's not good for the Pac-12. Did that hurt the conference? Did that hurt the conference that so many people who write some of the big articles don't get a chance to watch Pac-12 football or really don't care?
Well, what hurts them is their general television, the offer from the television networks wasn't as great because their viewing audience isn't as great.
Yeah.
And that money comes from advertisers. Well, if I'm advertising on your network, it's, as you know, it's because I need people to see my ad. Right. Yep. If I'm going to spend that money, how many people are going to see my ad, my commercial? And I've forgotten this statistic. You may know this off the top of your head. Isn't it something like 50% of the country lives within 20 miles of I-95?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not like that.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
And I, for those of you listening, I-95 runs up the East Coast from Boston, Massachusetts, down to Miami. And so you think about Boston to New York through Philadelphia, Baltimore, Washington, Richmond, down through the Carolinas, through Charlotte, you know, Atlanta, you know, I guess it turns into 85, but you know what I'm saying? Sure. It's like there's something like that. It's an obscene number of people. So that's also part of it, which is not the fault of anybody. But that's not Oregon's fault. It's just what it is, you know?
There's no doubt. UABsports.com is the website to buy tickets, to find out what's going on, everything that's UAB. The basketball program keeps doing their thing. Absolutely loving it. Of course, the women's basketball team doing pretty good. And we'll talk about that for just a second here, and then we'll get into some classic rock questions.
Yeah, man. I mean, women's basketball is on a tear. I mean, they had a thrilling finish with Memphis last night here in Bartow Arena. They won. So they're 2-0. I mean, undefeated, still undefeated in conference play, but have had a really good season so far. Really proud of Randy Norton and his staff and those kids. They really picked up in the offseason a lot of speed and size, which they needed to be more competitive, and have done so. And if nothing else, have gotten some. They had a lot of kids hurt last year, so he's gotten a lot more healthy than he was. In men's basketball, I'm convinced I'm going to need to get like an executive stress test. I'm going to have like some EKGs, man. I don't know if game by game it's going to be like this, but man alive, they've got a ton of talent that on some level, I think they could win our conference.
I know what you're saying, man. I said this early in the season. They're a fun team to watch, man. I mean, you can't go get a hot dog and take a whiz very often during a UAB basketball game. You can't. You're going to miss something. Yeah. I'm just saying. I mean, it's that fun to watch. And the other thing is
wonderful and terrifying.
It is terrifying, but they're very responsive. I know they play really hard, and I've watched enough hoops in my life to know when guys are mailing it in or not, and they play for coach, and so that says a lot. And you'll never see this team give up. And so, yeah, it is terrifying. It's exciting. It is something else, man.
We got a big game, home game with South Florida on Sunday, so hope fans will come out and see us play South Florida. It's another opportunity to. You know, to try to get another win if we can. We'll see. South Florida's got a good team as well this year. And, our team, like I said, we could win by 20 or be neck and neck and go to triple overtime.
Yeah, it could be. Mark Ingram, the UAB athletic director. It has been this year, they're saying, could be the greatest classic rock year in the history of classic rock. Now, you're thinking to yourself, now, how is that possible? It's 2024. Most of these bands, the Rolling Stones, are in their 63rd year, I think it is. And you're like, how is it possible? And then I'm thinking to myself, okay, well, I think COVID really corrected some things because I think a lot of people were kind of on the way out. And I think a lot of classic rock bands missed being on the road. And I think the idea, Stevie Nicks was one of those, the idea of never playing live again scared the hell out of her. She's like, oh my gosh, we almost lost it here, folks. We almost were told we could never play live again. And so everyone decided to get back on the road. So I went through a list before we got started today. It's just amazing. Kansas, Def Leppard, Lynyrd Skynyrd, Foreigner, Journey, the Foo Fighters, the Rolling Stones. The Eagles have pretty much just said, listen, we're just going to keep playing live. We don't have a worldwide tour. As long as you continue to come see us play, we'll just continue to keep playing. So I'm assuming they're going to be playing like Kiss for another 30 or 40 years, as long as they continue. Metallica, Iron Maiden, it's amazing. Then you got bands like AC/DC who are celebrating their 50th anniversary this year. And for whatever reason, we can't get them to commit to a tour. But have you ever seen, growing up, man, if three of those bands were on a summer tour, it was the greatest summer of your life.
Yeah,
I've never seen so many big classic rock bands on the road at one time in all my life. First of all, I can't afford to go see them all. I wish I could. But then you want to throw in your Taylor Swifts and your Beyoncés and these other people that aren't even the classic rock genre who continue to do their thing. But have you seen anything like it? It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I think people enjoy it. I mean, it's proving that people like that experience, love going to see, you know, their favorite artist. I mean, that's what it always was for me, man. Like I wasn't even really a Kiss fan until I saw Kiss live. Oh. And when I saw Kiss live, I felt like I had to go buy everything they had because it just changed. Like the way that they presented and performed, it was so exciting. That's what made me love them. And I've got a bunch of other bands, some that you've never heard of, that are that way for me, that if my buddy played it, I was like, that's okay. But then to see them live and see how charismatic maybe they were made me go, man, I love that guy. I love that band. I love that guitarist, whatever. I want more of that. Mm-hmm. And it makes you think about it. You know, when you listen to the music, it makes you reminisce about that show. And, you know, I'm not a big autograph guy. To me, autographs are about the experience of meeting the artist. It's not just, I don't want you to give me an autograph of Elton John. That doesn't do anything for me.
Yeah.
But I got to meet Elton John. Mm-hmm. Having the autograph, I guess, only proves that, in fact, I did meet Elton John and that I could talk about how I met Elton John. Mm-hmm. And then that's really what would be meaningful, right? Is that interaction if I got one. But even standing at the fence and him walking by and like scribbling his name up.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's the story that goes behind it. I mean, it really is. And that's why that autograph's worth a lot more.
And that's what the concert is.
Yeah. And there's nothing better, too, than you bring up a great, and I'll use this as an example, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but I've always liked Barry Manilow. I wouldn't tell anyone that I like Barry Manilow. I like Mandy. I like some of the songs. Growing up, I was a good Christian kid, so we listened to a lot of Barry Manilow in the Curry household. But it was until I saw him live in concert, the BJCC concert hall, it just took it to a different level for me. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm a real fan of this guy. And I mean, the guy looks like a freak, for God's sakes. I don't know how much Botox he takes. It's amazing. The guy, he's still singing. He's still doing his thing. He's still singing.
I think somebody that was like that for me, and I liked this guy. Probably more than maybe you did with Barry, but I had that kind of same thing with Rod Stewart. Yeah. I saw Rod Stewart live, and man, I was like, God, he is awesome. He is awesome. He was fun to watch and great performer, and just a wide variety of, like, a real wide range of sounds, music styles, you know, and really cool.
And I hope you get a chance to see him sing some of his old stuff, because he came out earlier last year and said, I'm not singing the Rod Stewart stuff anymore. All he's doing is the Storybook stuff, which really bums me out, because I would like to hear him sing Hot Legs one or two more times. All right. Thank you, brother. Appreciate you, man. We'll catch up next week.
Sounds good.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.